my friends. Welcome to the 7th installment of a new special edition series of my long-running Fish Fry podcast series called Makers Today, where we highlight the movers and shakers in the maker space. In this month's episode, my guest is Dr. Goff Liu. Dr. Goff Liu and I chat about the motivation to create the product review section of his website called Dr. Goff's Review Challenge, and what sets his reviews apart from other technology and component reviews out there today. We also discuss his role as a top member of the Element 14 community, the details of his blog post about a crude inverter design, and how a gift of a car battery when he was a child inspired him to experiment with electronic design.
Hi, Goff. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure.
Okay, so you have quite an extensive career in a relatively short amount of time. So, Goff, can you tell my audience a bit about your background and how you got involved in electronic engineering?
Amelia, you definitely flatter me there. I still think of myself as a hobbyist, actually. It's kind of interesting. Perhaps someone who takes their hobby a little bit too seriously sometimes, but definitely still a hobbyist. But I think I knew I was going to be involved in electronics in some way, even from a very young age. One of my earliest memories was literally smashing open one of those old incandescent filament light globes, cutting my fingers on it, and getting a little bit of discipline from my parents, and then promptly going and grabbing an energy-saving light globe and smashing that open too, because I was convinced there was some magic inside. But, you know, even from primary school, I was fortunate enough to have teachers that would bring in batteries, motors, and that kind of thing into the classroom. Nobody else seemed to want to play with it, so I just grabbed it with both hands and just took it home and had good fun with it. By high school, I was fortunate enough to have a little bit of pocket money, and we had local electronic shops like Dick Smith Electronics around here, and they're no longer anymore, sadly, but they had a Funway to Electronics series. They had electronic kits, and I would just spend my money on those, and that really honed my interest as well as my abilities in the area to do things like soldering, troubleshooting. And then I had an electronics teacher in high school, and we were one of the few high schools in the area offering electronics as a vocation. And so I was allowed to raid their parts cupboard for anything I needed, and hand draw, etch PCBs, and use a CNC milling machine as well to make PCBs. So I think all of those experiences were really formative in building my passion for electronics engineering and making in general, and gave me some confidence to start venturing out and trying things on my own. And so in university, I began studying a degree in electrical engineering, and later on, I switched to photovoltaics and solar energy engineering, did a short summer scholarship in surveying and spatial information systems, and then a PhD in civil and environmental engineering in water research. And now I'm a postdoctoral fellow in biomedical engineering. So I'm really a very interdisciplinary engineering person, and it's been great to just broaden those horizons because real life problems can come from anywhere, and you really need skills from all areas of engineering to really tackle them.
I think you're right. Now, Goff, you have a very interesting area of your site called Goff's Review Challenge. So tell me about the motivation to create these reviews and what are the rules that govern your reviews?
That's a very interesting corner of the site. How it started was really simply a few friends who aren't very electronics or tech savvy. They were interested in buying relatively cheap import electronics, and they didn't know what was good and what wasn't. And I mean, that's definitely a big challenge nowadays with counterfeit goods as well. And so they really wanted someone to give their expert opinion about these things, and they didn't mind it being shared online. So very often I'd get a tap on the shoulder and they'd say, hey, I'm happy to buy this and send it to you. Why don't you take it apart and see what's inside? And so that started to grow because once I started posting a few of these reviews, originally beginning with power banks, companies started to approach me and ask me, hey, you know, we've got this new product out. How would you like to feature it on your site? And so because of that, and because of a few early misunderstandings, shall we say, about how reviews are to be conducted, I felt that it was important just to put up that page so that readers know how these reviews are being conducted, and what to expect in terms of integrity, as well as that manufacturers who contact me also know what to expect in terms of their ability to control or affect the outcome. And I guess, you know, this is also tying in with a key aspect with reviews online nowadays. It's actually a lot of reviews are very shallow. They can be very short reviews that don't really give very much detail, or they are reviews that are, you know, just parroting what's on the back of the box or a press release, and you just don't know what it's really going to be like. It's hard to know what you can trust and what you can't. So I try to deviate a little bit from the average review and actually put in some effort to create more comprehensive, more detailed reviews that really give that owner experience, as well as a little bit of an insight into what's inside the product, as well as appeal to the technical people who might really want to know a little bit more about what's inside.
Absolutely. So you also write blogs for the Element 14 community as well. And I was really interested by your most recent blog. So tell my audience a bit about this series.
So I've been a top member of the Element 14 community for a while. And as part of that, part of the privilege is having a personal blog there. And so my personal blog at Element 14 is a little bit different. I tend to focus on things that I'm doing for Element 14 or working with Element 14, and I post those contents in that blog. And so this can involve things like further details and more in-depth sections of reviews, say for the road test program, which I've been a big part of. And so the latest series is about going into depth about the Keithley 2450 source meter, which is a bit of a dream instrument for a lot of people, and the kind of process and things that I tried while I reviewed it. In fact, a good bulk of my contributions to Element 14 have been in the road test review program, and it's a massive opportunity. If you're interested in new products, exciting launches, or even just want to, you know, have the chance to get your hands on some amazing gear, it's a real boon. You can just apply for a road test review, tell them how you're going to review the product. And if you're the lucky one that's picked, or lucky few that are picked, then you can basically have the product for free, but in exchange have to provide a detailed review within a 2-month timeframe. So I've been a key beneficiary of that program, and that's really netted me a lot of different things, be it evaluation kits for the latest ICs all the way through to test equipment, which has really helped build my lab and help me gather those results that are necessary for in-depth reviews. It's been quite an exciting journey with Element 14. And the best part of all is that it doesn't cost anything to be part of the community and to apply for these things. Other than that, I've been involved with a few other little projects with Element 14, like Project 14 program projects, where you can have the chance to just follow a project brief and potentially win some prizes. And so I've got a little bit of a musical series going on there where I abuse some test equipment to make some noises that it probably shouldn't. But I'm not going to speak too much about that. I really don't need to be given a reputation for abusing test equipment, shall we say?
That's great. Okay, Gov, you have so many cool projects on your site, but let's talk a little bit about your most recent crude inverter design.
That was a bit of a spur of the moment project. Someone on Element 14 actually mentioned that they work in the inverter area and that they've had some experiences with building inverters. And I thought, well, actually, why don't I give it a shot? But there is a little bit of a longer backstory to this one. So I guess if you have the time, when I was a kid, and I know parents will be concerned about their kids getting into electronics because, you know, electrical safety is definitely an issue. And so my parents wouldn't let me anywhere near mains electricity. It's just so dangerous. So when I was young, what I was allowed to use was just batteries. And by the time I got into high school, my parents gave me their old car battery because it had stopped working. And they thought, well, it's only 12 volts after all. Never mind the sulfuric acid and the high current. That's something else entirely. But when I got the car battery, I thought, well, you know, what am I going to do with this? Now, I thought I would try and make use of it somehow. But as for everyone who's gone camping before, they know automotive style 12 volt appliances aren't exactly any good. Like most of them are pretty poor at doing their function, and they can be quite expensive as well. Mains appliances are normally quite cheap and ubiquitous, but unfortunately, if you wanted to get mains from a 12 volt car battery, you'd have to buy an inverter. And back then, solid state inverters were very expensive. Couldn't afford one on my pocket money budget. So I had a little bit of an idea. I didn't really understand the difference between AC and DC beyond just drawing the curves. And I thought to myself, well, I have a 12-volt downlight transformer. It takes in 240 volts here in Australia, and it puts out 12 volts on the output. What would happen if I were to hook up that 12-volt secondary to the car battery? Would I actually get 240 out of the primary? And so before I ventured any further, I asked my dad about this, and I said, do you think this is going to work? And he told me no, but he couldn't explain to me why. And so being a curious kid, I gathered some old house wiring cables, probably about 1 mil square, and an old discarded 63 amp circuit breaker, and dutifully hooked up the car battery with the multimeter that I bought just 2 weeks ago. And then I flipped the switch, and you can probably guess what happened next. I saw a small spike on the multimeter, and then it went straight down to zero. And I thought, what's going on? I turned it off. And then waiting a little while, I turned it on again, but this time I left it on a little bit longer. And then the potting compound in the transformer started to bubble and smoke started to come out. And I just knew I'd toasted the transformer then. And so in my haste, I grabbed it while it was still hot and just gave myself a bit of a minor burn while throwing it out. But pretty much, yep, toasted the transformer and ate humble pie. So at the end of the day, you know, I now know what happened. And it's because, you know, it's like a journey. It's a journey of personal growth. And so I didn't understand how iron cores would saturate under pure DC and the transformer windings would just be the pure winding resistance. So now that, you know, we can buy inverters, they're not that expensive. And recently I just repaired an inverter that I brought from overseas that was dead on arrival because of counterfeit MOSFETs. I kind of gained an appreciation for how inverters are designed. And then I also understood that most current electronic devices, they use switch mode power converters, which means that they're not really sensitive to their input in terms of voltage, in terms of frequency, because the first thing they do is they just take the input and convert it straight to DC. So knowing this, I decided, well, why don't I just build the crudest inverter that I can think of that's going to create a voltage somewhere in the range of 100 to 240 volts where most switch mode appliances can function, at a frequency of about 50 hertz, and perhaps this would work well enough. And sure enough, it did. I literally built an H-bridge out of scrap MOSFETs that I had left over from a MOSFET testing round and a DigiSpark, which is a small tiny 85 board, I believe it is. And yeah, I mean, I tested it for efficiency using all the brilliant test equipment I have thanks to the road test program, and it turned out to be more efficient at low loads below 20 watts compared to conventional commercial inverters. So now I can power my 12-watt LED bedside light from my car batteries, which are charged by solar during the day. It's absolutely brilliant to be able to get your hands on even just some scrap parts and just build something useful out of it and get some use.
I love that. And that is a great story. Okay, so out of all of the things you have created, torn down, reviewed, or otherwise over the years, has there been a project that was your favorite?
It's quite hard to say, actually. I tear down many things, either for review or even for repair. And I find that tearing things down is a great process because it gives us a lot of information about how something is going to perform. And we can learn a little bit about how it's been designed. And so, to be honest, I really don't have a favorite as such. I think everything has their own little elegance, even though you might not be able to appreciate it at first glance. So I guess it's the whole point that even things like PCB design and circuit design, there is an art to it. And sometimes if you don't understand it, it might take a little bit of time and you can revisit it later on and then find that there is something that you missed, like a genius way of saving a few components or a great way to lay out a PCB to minimize the number of wires or to make it a lower cost two-layer board instead of a four-layer board. Sometimes, you know, you can see much older designs that have elegant swooping lines which were hand laid out with tape, or they might be straight as an arrow turning at 90 degrees. Everything has its own kind of elegance. And so I've seen some Easter eggs where some people have literally put song lyrics on a PCB, and I thought that was pretty nifty. But at the end of the day, I think that every teardown has its own little uniqueness and things that you can learn from it. And it's almost like being mentored by someone without ever meeting them by examining how that they design their products. And from that, you can take a little bit of inspiration. You can see what works well, what doesn't, and replicate that in your own design. So it's a great way to learn if you have the time to just kind of get under the hood and do some reverse engineering.
I love that. I love the elegance of PCB design. That's really cool. So Gough, do you have any advice for young engineers or makers coming up today?
Well, I would still count myself as young, relatively speaking. So perhaps I'm not the best qualified to answer this question. But, I know the graybeards would probably have a lot more to say than I would. But I have definitely compiled a long list. To start off with, I think modern electronics can be a little bit off-putting. In some ways, it seems more and more like an opaque box. And I think that's really what turns a lot of people off electronics. But taking an interest in that, it's really life-changing, because as you slowly begin to understand what makes this tick, that opaque box becomes less and less opaque. As you start building your own designs and circuits which do similar things, you begin to realize that it's not really a magic as such. It's actually been quite deliberately designed. And once you understand how that's done and you can do it yourself, then you become empowered to create. And I think it's a brilliant journey and it's very rewarding. So I would advise, for people who might be sitting on the fence, it's a great hobby to get into. And there's probably never been a better time to become an engineer or a maker. I mean, information access is just so easy now. Everything's at your fingertips, be it a data sheet, an application note, a white paper, a webinar, or even a product review. You can just call it up on the internet. Doesn't cost you very much or anything. And reference resources, calculators, simulators, design tools, conversion tools, they're all very easy to obtain and use nowadays. And with the open source movement, we've got open source hardware and software, which has really reduced the barrier to entry because things are now a lot cheaper, if not even free. And I remember when I was younger, just getting into microcontrollers, the cost of the programmer would have been out of my budget. But now with things like the Arduino, you really get the whole programmer and microcontroller for a price that we couldn't have dreamed of. So I think, starting is not all that difficult, even if you're doing it on your own, because the resources are out there. Don't forget the satisfaction. If you start off, you can start off small, but as you start to grow and you tackle bigger and bigger projects, you can often surprise yourself with being able to do something that you didn't think you could. And once you get a taste of this, it's addictive and you just want to keep going. I guess another, key advantage is that when things break, you don't have to throw them out. You don't have to buy a new one. And that's great for the environment. It's great for your hip pocket. The probable downside is you become that person which people come to when they need electronics help. And that could be a little bit off-putting sometimes, but that's a recognition that you have a power that they're looking for. So I guess it makes you a bit indispensable. Now, I guess my biggest advice, or advices, I should say, in a list would be to take it all in and learn whatever you can, because it's probably going to come in handy at one point or another. If you have a mentor, make good use of them. Don't worry if you don't understand everything at first, because nobody does, and I certainly didn't. I've made that bear today. But sometimes it takes several goes to get things right or to have that aha moment where you kind of understand and things solidify in your mind. And so other times you just have to build it and try it, because sometimes you think, you might have a genius idea, but why hasn't anyone done it? Well, sometimes there's something that you don't understand, but by building it, it becomes practical and you can actually work out why it's not done. Sometimes, numbers and formulas in textbooks can be quite scary, but in real life, there are lots of tools to help you on the way. So don't worry about the first principles necessarily when you might have certain design tools or calculators which you can use to make things a little bit easier. Sometimes trial and error is okay, and there are component non-idealities, which mean that trial and error and fine-tuning would be needed anyway. So getting close enough is sometimes good enough. Don't be afraid to spend a few bucks to chase down curiosities, and perhaps don't be afraid of making mistakes. Every magic smoke event is humbling, but it is an opportunity to grow. And be a lifelong learner, try those experiments, and by doing so, build your problem-solving skills, because things may not work the first time around. Learning to solder is quite essential, and I grew up with through-hole components, and I know that I was very much afraid of SMD when it came in. I saw it as an evil ploy that would make, you know, home building an impossibility. But over time, I've come to realize that SMD isn't evil. In fact, with low-cost PCB manufacturing and with relatively hacky ways, shall we say, of soldering SMD components, you can have the benefit of miniaturization and layouts, which wouldn't be possible with through-hole technology, and inexpensively as well. So learn those skills, try them out. You know, SMD soldering, everyone has their own little tips and tricks and own ways, but make sure you learn it because it's definitely something that's going to come in handy. Don't be afraid to build a product that already exists, because even if your product or your version is inferior, it's still an opportunity to learn, and often the journey itself is more valuable than the end product. Embrace software. So I know a lot of people love the hardware side of things and designing circuits, but nowadays more and more often things involve an element of software, and software lends a big flexibility to your design, and how it interfaces to the hardware can be a point of magic. So if you can embrace software, then you can have the best of both worlds. Don't be afraid to break things apart, especially if they're already broken. That's really how I often started with getting my junk box filled, was just basically tearing apart things that have been left on the street side because they're broken. But, you know, if it's already broken, the worst you can do is break it. It's already broken, so you're not losing anything. But do stay safe. It's really not worth a life to save something that's, you know, cheap and flimsy. So investing in quality tools, test equipment, and learning how to use that properly, I think that's definitely a big, important point. As I mentioned earlier, examine other people's designs. Teardowns are a great way to do that. Don't forget to document your own work and share it with others if you can. That way, if you forget what you did earlier, there's always something to go back to, and you can help others along with their journey as well. And that way, everyone can benefit. And I guess, you know, it's in the community spirit. And of course, last but not least, don't forget to have fun and don't give up.
I love that. Those are some great, great tips. All right, it's time for your off-the-cuff question now, Goff. I've been asking my speakers lately the same question, so I'm throwing it at you. A lot of times we can't get our favorite foods right now because of lockdown. So if you could have one meal right now, it doesn't matter if it's on the other side of Australia, you need a passport to get there, the restaurant is closed, what would you have?
That's a difficult question. I mean, I haven't been to a restaurant in so long. Oh, I'm going to have to think hard about this one, but I think Korean fried chicken probably ranks pretty high up on that list.
That's a good choice.
I'd have to say, you know, sometimes it's not so much the meal, but it's the people you have that meal with. So, you know, looking forward to getting back with my friends, perhaps once this COVID lockdown is over here in Sydney. It's just been quite tough for all of us, but I'm sure, you know, there will be light at the end of the tunnel eventually.
Eventually, and I think there's some Korean chicken on your menu.
I'm sure of it. I've already let my friends know, you know, just pencil in that date.
I love it. Awesome. Well, it was a pleasure speaking with you, Goff. Thank you so much for joining me.
And thanks for having me, Amelia. It's been a great experience and a great opportunity. And of course, you know, if you're interested in connecting with me, you can definitely find me on my website at gofflouis.com or on Element 14. See you around.
So if you'd like even more information about Dr. Goff Liu, I've included a couple links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. Are you a maker? Well, tell me your story. I am looking for guests for this show. If you would like to join me in a future episode of Makers Today, please send me an email at Amelia, that's A-M-E-L-I-A, at eejournal.com. Or you can always reach me on LinkedIn as well. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And don't forget, if you want to follow my personal Twitter account, check out AmeliaD1978. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, Sure, I dig it. You can follow me or us on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/EEJournal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by yours truly. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can subscribe to this here podcast through Spotify, Podbean, or Apple Podcasts. And remember, if you'd like to further support this podcast, please leave me a review on that podcasting platform of your choice. It really does help. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology or heck you just want to chat, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For December 15th, 2021, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.